I'd like now to welcome to the program Lisa Gray Fisher. She's author of the new novel Full Body Wag, published by Sunstone Press, and she will be at Collected Works Bookstore tonight at 6 o'clock. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.
I couldn't resist the title of this book because I have three dogs, one of whom actually does the full body wag on a daily basis, and we call it that, and I was very surprised that somebody had chosen that title for a novel.
Yes, well, actually, I have to give my husband credit for choosing that title, but our dog does the same thing, and it's just a delight to watch. As I have one of the characters say, it's when you've got more happiness than tail, so the entire body has to wag.
Exactly. So this is a book in which dogs certainly play a prominent part, but it's about human characters. And it's funny, years and years ago when I just started doing this show, I did a book. I had somebody on talking about an anthology of essays about dogs from Bark magazine. And reading them, it's remarkably difficult to write stories about dogs. They have to end up being about humans if they're going to be any good.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true because dogs and people are so deeply intertwined. And I think I open with a quote from Scott Momaday that says that very well. He says, "It is no wonder that dogs should figure in the long story of man's presence on the planet. Their tenure is the same, or it is so closely alike as to be indistinguishable. There might have been a dog in the Garden of Eden."
Exactly. The book starts out with a writing class, and there is a teacher, which I suspect, I don't know, but might be kind of based on you?
Yes, she is in part. She is absolutely in part, since I've been a teacher for countless years, the last 18 at Santa Fe Prep, and yes, it definitely grows out of my experience as a teacher, though not one particular class. Characters are all aggregates of students I've had, of experiences that I've had, and in this case, it is a student who more or less takes over the class. And
she's incredibly annoying.
She is incredibly annoying. I call her the writing workshop monster, the one you hope will never sign up.
And they always do.
And she comes in late, she's lost, she's flustered. She's a Texas transplant in Santa Fe and has retained her sort of Texas manner. But one of her most striking characteristics is a great, enduring love of dogs. She explains that she is childless and has always treated her dogs as children, and she's certainly not shy about that. She loves her dogs inordinately, and they have created all kinds of problems in her life, which she also loves. Later on in the book, we are introduced to a character named Big Willie, who has only one eye, and who is a failed Hollywood extra.
Which is not easy to do.
No, it is not easy to fail as an extra. And he is a ne'er-do-well who rescues a dog who actually ends up more or less rescuing him. She's marvelous. She's so sharp. He definitely calls her his better half. Accidentally loses her, as he does so many things. And he becomes transformed through a rather unorthodox process into a charismatic dog healer, which is perfect for the annoying woman, Sue, with her troubled dogs. So clearly their stories are going to intersect. Big Willie is really unbelievably scummy, I guess is the word I would use. He has every flaw known to humankind, but he relates to dogs beautifully and is more or less half dog himself.
Now, is he based on somebody you met?
Initially, he was based on someone we knew when we lived up in the mountains near Penasco in the 70s. There was a character named One-Eyed John who was infamous in the hills. He was absolutely irrepressible. He had no sense of boundaries. He never cut his toenails because he thought it appealed to women, which it did not. he had one glass eye that he always took out and popped back in. And he was actually a transplant from the Lower East Side and terrorized some of the locals.
But the Lower East Side of New York.
Yes, yes, right. And is long gone, so I can speak about him freely. without fear of retribution.
Right.
But he was the initial inspiration for Big Willie, and then Big Willie outgrew him and really became an aggregate of so many men that I've known and loved. And he does become more lovable as he goes along.
We're talking to Lisa Gray Fisher about her novel, Full Body Wag. So this is, in some ways, a compendium of your experiences living in northern New Mexico, where you are also a transplant. You came here, what, in your early 20s?
Yes, I did, from Colorado, not too far away.
Yeah.
But I had been in California. I graduated from Pomona College, and then I lived in San Francisco after that. And it was a time when becoming self-sustaining and self-sufficient was very important to a lot of us. So Rick,
so people who were making, who were living on communes and building these organic farms and so on.
Exactly. And New Mexico was a perfect place for that.
Yeah.
And I had lived in New Mexico before, and I did love it. And so I came out to a place called El Valle, where Rick was in the process of restoring an adobe house, which was kind of a rite of passage for young people at that time. So we did that and lived up there for 5 years. Amongst a very zany, quirky bunch of people, wonderful people, who definitely did inspire part of this. And then the rest of it, as I say, it's no surprise, it starts in an English classroom. The rest of it comes out of my teaching experience. So both of them were really instrumental in creating these books, in this book. I have been very careful not to take anything directly from any one person or time, but together have given away a lot of my experiences to various characters,
right,
in different settings.
I love you say in the preface, it's a time in when you were there in the 70s when somebody could write you a letter, or to your husband, that says, "The guy with red hair and a green truck who lives somewhere near Penasco," and you get the letter.
Exactly, exactly. It was a wonderful time in that we were singular and everybody knew us. There were so few people, and there were especially so few Anglos, that yes, we were known to everyone, and we knew everyone too. So that was lovely. I had at one point thought, you know, this is kind of a place to retreat where you will be anonymous, and I found out it was exactly the opposite.
You can only be anonymous in a big city.
Exactly.
You cannot be anonymous in a village or in a rural place.
Right, right, right. We once had an experience, which I didn't use, with the FBI when Patty Hearst was on the run, and they came up there looking for her, believe it or not.
They came to Penasco?
Yes, through a series of very odd and dubious leads, and they were dressed like Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. and had their van and they had their big glasses, and I thought, this is ridiculous.
Here comes the fuzz.
The last place anyone could ever hide out.
Exactly.
But it was lovely, and the people in El Valle were so patient with us and taught us how to be good farmers, how to be good neighbors, how to reciprocate for generosity that went way beyond their means. So it was a lovely time, and I'm very thankful that we had that.
Would you like to read from any part of the book, Full Body Wag?
Well, let's see. Would you like me to read from the annoying character, Sue?
Sure.
Where she's trying desperately not to write. That's one of her goals. She has 10 minutes to write, to sketch out a story.
Yeah, she's coming to a writing group, but she just wants to basically talk.
That's it.
And thereby keep everybody else from doing their work.
Exactly. And the chapter's entitled Hijacked, because hijacking is what she does to this teacher. She takes the class away from her, and actually at the end of the chapter moves it into a teepee, her own teepee on her land. But here she is talking about the story that she's decided to write. Not write, I mean. 10 minutes isn't much time. This is a big story, you know, and I don't know where to start with only 10 minutes. See, the trip is just a piece of the whole dog story, which is really the story of our marriage, Max and me. Even though we got him, Rune, and how I named him, that's another story, we got him before we were officially married. The trip to visit Max's folks in Wharton, that was before we got married, too, and we were trying to make a good impression. Well, they were, too, because they wanted us to marry. And Take and Rune made it a family trip, you see. He was like our dog, like all, he was like our kid, like all our dogs have been since we never had kids. I've done a lot of work around the pet as child thing with my therapist. She says we use dogs as a way to connect, to work as a team, almost like we're in the harness and they're driving. And Rune, he was so big, such a friendly mutt. Couldn't teach him a thing, except, well, he always had a heart on, and Max taught him how to roll over and expose it. Expose, Max would command, and Rune always did. But that's all he did. So he took up the whole back seat of the Galaxy, head lolling out the window. You'd never think a dog that size could squeeze through an itty-bitty slit, just enough to give him air when we went in to have a drink at Hip's Bubble Room, this old bar where Max used to go. But he got out somehow, and after we nearly had heart failure thinking he was lost, we found him around back, the cook feeding him scraps. And of course it was raining by then, a regular flood, but Rune had fur like a seal. The water just ran off it. Have any of y'all ever owned a dog?
Lisa Gray Fisher, reading from Full Body Wag. Now, what do you do as a writer of a novel when you have characters who, like Big Willie or this Sue who is so annoying, or he who has, as you call it, every bad quality the human being can have? Do you have to love them anyway?
Definitely, very much so, absolutely, and yes. I by the end, I adored Sue and Big Willie, and I think they get more lovable as you get to know them, and as they get to know themselves and the group. So for me, a lot of the book was the evolution of the friendships with the between the characters, and I guess between the characters and me, too. Sue comes off very strong and very sort of demanding in this first chapter, and she gets much, much mellower as she goes along and realizes she doesn't need to assert that kind of power. And Big Willie, as he becomes half dog, really starts to fall in love with people too, as dogs do.
As dogs
do. So yes, so he again acquires a much much greater empathy for the world and the world for him then as a response to that. So all of those things came out as I got to know the characters better, and as I say, as they sort of got to know each other better, developed bonds with one another.
How do you go from working with personal material? Well, first of all, did you keep journals and so on, or did you just try to remember what that time of your life was like?
I have a lot. I've always written. I've written since I was a child, and so I have a lot of material written down. And I also did write, just for myself, a nonfiction account of our time in Alvai, because I did want to recall it all. So I had that to draw on. And the fact is that we love to tell stories. So there are stories that we've told over and over again to friends, to newcomers, and so on.
When you say we.
I mean Rick and me, my husband and I.
Yeah.
And so these stories are just part of our heritage. And I used bits and pieces of them, as I say, and reassigned them. And some of them were dreams that never actually came true. And some of them were pretty close to reality, but compressed. So 14 different experiences camping make one horrendous camping trip in the book.
Right.
Again, just the camping trip from hell.
Right.
So that's how I did it. But yes, I do know a lot of these stories are drawn from our lives, not all of them.
What are your literary influences? What novels did you read and that helped shape this one?
Oh, I in fact I mentioned some of them in the book itself. First of all, as a child, I loved dog stories and horse stories, animal stories. And I have one of the characters talk about the fact that they usually turn out pretty well, because we want things to turn out well for animals. So as a child, it was very comforting to read Albert Payson Terhune and, all of the, I can't even think of the name of the author right now, who wrote Sea Star and Misty of Chincoteague and all of those stories.
Right.
That comes from way back. That's the animal side. I read so much wonderful literature with my students in class every day. And I love I love Garcia Marquez's storytelling voice. It's one of my favorites. So we read, and we read 100 Years of Solitude almost every year. I love dialogue. I teach screenwriting at the school, too, so there's a lot of dialogue in the book. And I teach playwriting as well, so I love...
At Santa Fe Prep?
Mm-hmm, yes, I like that. I like that form of communication in a narrative, too. So I'm trying to think. There are, oh, gosh, there are countless. I love Vonnegut as a writer. And he uses dialogue, I think, beautifully, and storytelling again. We read another direct influence, I'm trying to think. this book has been compared to John Nichols in terms of the style and the Milagro-Beanfield War, and I certainly love his work.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that was in the back of my mind, too. Every year I read Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas with students under Thompson, so some of the... more graphic descriptions are probably influenced by him. And I know there are countless others that I'm just not thinking of right now. But
right. Now, did any of your own dogs make it into this book?
Absolutely. Rune was one of my dogs, the one that
okay.
she's describing. And I'm afraid that the attributes given him were real. There's another dog, our current dog, Molly, shows up as a dog named Thor later on in the book, who is devoted and fairly neurotic, as our dog is. So yes, our dogs definitely made it in. And good dogs that we've had in the past, I gave to other people as well. So yes, they are definitely in there. And in fact, our dog is on the cover of the book as well.
Right.
So
which is a kind of a... photoshopped collage of all kinds of people, dogs, and pickup trucks.
Exactly. And again, Rick designed it, but there were actual family members in the shot, and the truck is one that was transported from the U.S. to England because they don't have old trucks. They rust out, and this couple really wanted an old truck. The little dog that's on the running board lives on the running board, so he was part of that picture. They're very proud of their truck, and it shows up all over the internet. And, of course, Monte Sol and Monte Luna in the back.
Right.
And so on. So, yes, very much a family, a full family wag is the
full
cover.
Full body, full family wag.
Exactly. Exactly.
Lisa Gray Fisher, you say in your book that you really enjoy the writing process and that while other people have to suffer for their art, you just... seem to enjoy it.
Well, I said I actually feel a little guilty about that,
right.
Because from my heritage, anything that you don't suffer for can't be any good.
And what heritage is that?
Oh, it's just my Anglo-American, Western, German, European heritage, you know, that has the starving artist who has suffered and has really labored to bring forth something. But these tales were such a pleasure to write that I did feel a little bit of guilt about that, and I thought, well, why am I having so much fun with this? But I had a great deal of fun writing them. Most of them were written in the summer, because that's when I'm not teaching. And initially, I had a little trouble not setting them all in the summer.
Right.
That's when I was writing. But it's also a time of relaxation, a time of joy and pleasure, and so that was part of it. I think that's what part of what comes across is the joy of a time of leisure to think and to write, to talk, to be with friends.
And going from the personal stories to a novel form that is coherent, I would think that would be one of the most challenging parts of it.
Yes, and I had actually initially not expected to write a novel. I wrote the first story, and I thought, well, that's great, and it's a story. And I read it. We have a faculty reading, and at Prep every year. I read it. People loved the characters and the theme, and I thought, well, maybe I'll keep working on this. And then I developed another whole plot with Big Willie and his group, who are making a terrible film in Arizona called Claws. Willie is playing the mutant lobster in this film. Clearly not meant to see the light of day.
Right.
But in any case... I just kept going, and I was enjoying the characters, and I really enjoyed the process, as I said, of getting to know them and getting to develop them. Pretty soon I had a series of more stories than I used in the book. I had maybe 15 or 16, and I cut some of them. And then I thought, well, all right, let's see. These actually do connect up over about a year and a half of time within the book, and they actually do fit together. And I'm writing about a lot of the same themes, so I can find a through line for them. And that's how it grew into a novel. I was fortunate enough to have a semester off, a leave from prep in 2009, and that gave me the time to really think and connect and join all of the stories together. So that was vital. It was critical.
The book is called Full Body Wag by Lisa Gray Fisher, and she will be at Collected Works Bookstore tonight at 6:30. At 6 o'clock.
At 6 o'clock, yes. And I wanted to mention two other things. One of them is that at the reading, after the reading, I will be in conversation with Jack Loeffler.
Who's wonderful and who's been on the show many times.
Yes, he's terrific, and I've known him for over 25 years. So we are old friends, and he knows many of the characters from The Hills who inspired the characters in the book.
Right, right.
Also, I should mention that the book has a website.
Fullbodywagbook.com.
Correct. And please do visit it.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.